Okay. Hello. Actually, I'm from the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven, and we're not associated with the University of Connecticut.
Oh, I apologize. I jumped the gun on that.
I am going to speak about a dynamic model to couple carbon and nitrogen metabolism with transport in whole plants, and in fact, it explicitly includes the movement of water in plants. Most mechanistic models try to predict crop growth and yield from physiological principles, and most of the current crop growth models we've discussed at this meeting are largely based on the environmental response of photosynthesis. And water status and fertilization are usually introduced only in that they affect photosynthesis or leaf and root expansion. And transport of carbon and nitrogen between root and leaf is assumed to occur following the rules for partitioning of dry matter. I want to talk about a very different sort of model, sort of like a big cell model of plants, rather like a big leaf model, in which we assume the plant is a big cell and that we have metabolic reactions going on according to the concentrations of various metabolites involved. In attempting to do this, however, it becomes evident that you have to include water in the model because the metabolites that move around in a plant move around in bulk flow of water. They don't move independently. And in addition, the metabolite concentrations in various parts of the plant will vary according to the water status or the water volume. And the metabolite concentrations will change or affect the water potential and thus the movement of water around the plant. So it's very difficult to deconvolute all these things. So I want to present a model first of the movement of water in plants. I think this is the first model of a coherent model using simple physiological principles that predicts both the movement of water in the xylem and the phloem and the movement of nitrate and sugars in those tissues. First of all, we'll talk about short distance transport, which occurs within a particular part of the plant, let's say the leaf or the root. And basically, it's governed by diffusion or active transport across membranes. This is a schematic diagram of, let's say, a section of a plant. You can see the cytoplast and the apoplast, which is the cell wall surrounding the cell, and then the xylem and the phloem, which are the other compartments that are in part of this model. And within any particular organ or tissue of the plant, we assume it's short-distance diffusion, which moves both water and solutes between the various compartments. And they may also be affected by active transport in some cases. So we assume that this short-distance transport is rapid and leading to a steady state. In particular, for the diffusion of water, you'll get similar water potential or psi between the various compartments of a tissue. And we assume that the movement of water is responding to the difference in water potentials times the conductance, the volumetric conductance. There are various components to the water potential. The mole fraction, effect of gravity, which I'm going to ignore here, effect of osmotic pressure or osmotic potential, and turgor pressure. And now, basically, I'm going to present the model in which all of these are related to the amount of water in a particular compartment, and so water content or relative water content is the state variable in this model. So for the xylem and apoplast, when the solute concentrations are low, the water potential is basically governed by the mole fraction of water. And here I present an equation to predict the water potential in air as a mole fraction of water in air. But for apoplast material or cell wall material, we would expect a less of a strong effect of mole fraction on water potential. And just as a guess, I put in that the water potential changes by -1 megapascal per each decrease, 10% decrease in relative water content, leading to the bottom equation. Now, within the phloem and cytoplast, we have a membrane that bounds the cell and allows for relatively high concentrations of solutes. And therefore, you can have an osmotic effect, which decreases the potential of water. And I've assumed a linear relationship to the concentration based on this constant 2.4 megapascals per liter per mole of solute. When this happens, this changes makes the water potential more negative and thus draws water into the compartment and develops a turgor pressure. And that turgor pressure will depend on the volume of the compartment or the extra volume and the elasticity of the cell wall. And for the purpose of this model, I've assumed the elasticity is 10 megapascals per unit change in volume. And so the water potential for the cytoplast and the phloem is governed by the lower equation on this slide. Now, long distance transport is different in that there is a change in hydraulic pressure between the various parts of the plant, for instance, the leaf and the root, and that's what drives the movement of water. This is just a schematic showing how the change in tension between the leaf and the root xylem causes water to move up in the xylem, and then the change in turgor pressure in the phloem causes water to move down from the leaf to the root. We assume that the movement of water is basically going to be a linear function of the difference in pressure, the turgor the tension in the case of the xylem, times the volumetric conductance. And similarly, for the phloem, the rate of flow of water in the phloem is going to be a linear relationship of the difference in turgor pressure between the root and the leaf. The model also predicts the accumulation and use of nitrogen in the form of nitrate and sugars. So the source of nitrate is uptake of nitrate from the soil by active transport into the root cytoplasm. Source of carbon is photosynthesis in leaf cytoplasm. The sinks for carbon and nitrogen are metabolism leading to growth in both the cytoplasm of root and leaves. And then metabolites move between compartments within the root by diffusion, as I described. So the movement within a compartment, like within the root, the nitrate does not move with the water. It moves independently according to either active transport or diffusion, whereas between the root and the leaves, there is a coupling between the movement of water and the movement of the metabolites. These processes were all programmed as a finite difference model using a VenSim, which is a visual dynamic simulation tool. And the model was run over several diurnal cycles until we came to a steady state. And what I will present in terms of results is the water potentials and the metabolite concentrations that result after a steady state was achieved. This is just a schematic of the model for the leaf. This is the movement or the volumes of water in the xylem, the apoplast, the cytoplast, and the phloem. Everything goes through the apoplast. And unique to the leaf, there's a flow of water from the apoplast to the air. And there's also photosynthesis happening in the cytoplast, which eventually moves out to the phloem and goes to the root. And likewise, nitrate comes into the leaf from the xylem, goes through the apoplast, and to the cytoplast, where both sugars and nitrate are consumed during growth processes. The processes that occur in the roots are almost identical to those that occur in the leaf. The affinities for sugar and nitrate assume to be the same, and so are the conductivities. We have a few changes. We have flow of water into the plant from the soil to the apoplast, and we have nitrate uptake by the cytoplast. I should comment that unless you have active transport of nitrate into the cytoplast, you don't get enough nitrate into the xylem to support growth by the leaves. And then finally, we have coupling of movement of the metabolites between root and leaf. Here we have the flow of water that are responding to the pressure in the root and the leaf. And this is the movement of xylem is then coupled to the flow of water according to the concentration of nitrate in the xylem. And likewise in the phloem, we have this is the model assumes that positive flow is to the leaf, but in fact, the flow of water is typically from the leaf to the root in the phloem. And so there's a coupling of the flow of water with the concentration of sugars in the phloem. This is basically a proof of concept. So this is a generic plant. I'm going to be modeling based on 1 liter or 1 kilogram of fresh weight of the plant, assuming a dry matter fraction of 10%, a relative growth rate of 10% per day, and a weight ratio of 75% in the leaves and 25% in the roots. And the rates of transpiration that I'll be using correspond to these rates, 6 millimoles per meter squared per second for water and 20 micromoles per meter squared per second for carbon, with a leaf area ratio of about 40 grams per dry weight per meter squared. How am I doing?
Oh, you've got 5 minutes.
Good. It's hard to get all the stuff in. Okay, so these are some of the results of how the model performed. With those rates of transpiration and the conductivities that I used, we got a water potential of about minus 0.6 bars, megapascals during the day, during rapid transpiration, and minus 0.14 megapascals in the root. So there's a difference of about 0.4 megapascal between the root and the leaf in the xylem, which is that's the difference in the apoplast, but the xylem is very similar. And then in the phloem, we have a relatively high concentration of sugars, and so the turgor pressure in the phloem is relatively high. We have 1.8 megapascals in the leaf and 0.6 in the roots, leading to a pressure difference of 1.2 megapascals. I would like to comment that this model will predict movement of sugars from the leaf to the root at lower concentrations of sugar and lower turgor pressures in the phloem. But if you allow that to happen, what you also see is a reverse flow of water in the phloem from the root to the leaf during the day because of the negative potential that builds up due to transpiration. So these numbers are a result of restricting the conductance in the phloem until there was no reverse flow of solution to the leaf. The average fluxes from root to the leaf in fluxes per day were 9 liters of water. That's transpiration per day, and that carried along 29 millimoles of nitrate to the leaf, which was sufficient to support leaf growth at this rate. And then in the phloem, there was relatively low flow of water, only 15 milliliters per day from the leaf to the root, carrying 13 millimoles of sugar. Because the root requires less sugar for growth than the leaf, there's fewer moles of sugar. I should also mention that in this model, I assume that the sugar has a composition of 8 carbons, so that the balance of carbon and nitrogen is appropriate for plants, and it would correspond to a mixture of sucrose and glucose. The nitrate concentrations predicted, the soil concentration is given at 1 millimolar, and the concentrations predicted by the model in the leaf and root are given here. There's active transport of nitrate into the cytoplasm of the root, leading to a relatively high concentration of 190 millimoles, and then some of that leaks out of the cytoplast into the apoplast, leading to a concentration of 6 millimoles, and about 4.5 millimoles is in the xylem of the root that is moved to the leaf. Because of exchange of xylem nitrate in the leaf with the apoplast, the concentration of xylem in the leaf is only 2 millimoles, 1 millimole in the apoplast, but because of active transport, the cytoplast of the leaf ends up with about 35 millimoles of nitrate, which is sufficient to support growth of the leaf. In terms of sugar concentrations, the sugar is being created by photosynthesis in the leaf, so we have a relatively high concentration of about 250 millimoles of sugar in the cytoplast. About 9 millimoles leaks out into the apoplast. This model requires that the affinity of sugar uptake by the phloem is higher than sugar affinity by the cytoplast, otherwise you don't get enough sugar in the phloem. So we end up with about nearly 1 millimole, 0.9 moles of sugar in the phloem. After transport to the root, there's about 0.3 moles of sugar, of which 0.4 millimoles, very low concentration, leaks out into the apoplast in the root, but because of active uptake into the cytoplast, we find 16 millimoles of sugars in the cytoplast, which is sufficient to support growth by the root. So that's a summary of this model. It's in the testing stage. It needs to be developed for particular plants and also to allow it to react to various environmental effects such as temperature and light levels and that sort of thing. These are just a list of references to justify the parameters used in the model. Thank you.
Thank you. Martin, we have time for one or two questions. Dennis?
You know, I once watched maple syrup being produced from maple trees, and I noticed that there are no leaves on the plant, so what's driving the flow of the sap through the tree is probably osmotic or temperature gradients. Is that something from your models you can look at as well?
Well, that's an unusual situation where you have positive pressure in the root driving the sap flow. As you point out, there is no tension in the leaves because there are no leaves. I haven't considered that for this particular model, no.
Other questions? Good. Thank you, Mark. Okay, our final speaker for this session is Johannes Postma with Pennsylvania State University.